cierto. Sergeant at Arms, would you go round up the elected officials?
Commissioner Saltzman's sick.
Oh, Commissioner Saltzman's sick? Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. We'll have a little bit of preamble before we gavel ourselves into order. We're glad that you're here. How many of you have been to the City Council chambers before? Raise your hand. All right. For those of you that are new, it's the rules of the chamber to ensure that all points of view are welcomed and facilitated. There's no clapping. There's no booing. There's no hissing. But if you like something, you can give a thumbs up. If you don't like something, you're welcome to give a thumbs down. Signs cannot cover your face or go above your head for security reasons. If you're representing, if you're a lobbyist and representing an organization, you just need to give us the organization that you're authorized to represent. We only want your name when you sit down up here. We do not want your address, for privacy reasons. And there's a clock up there that will help you count down your 3 minutes, which is our standard time for comment. And with that, we will gavel ourselves in. Waiting for the screen to come up here. Maybe they went to the restroom. Last week, we didn't have any video at all.
Doing good.
There we are. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Today is Wednesday, November 17th, 2010. I'd like to wish my oldest sister a very happy birthday. It's 9:30 a.m. We'll begin with communications. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
Can you please call the roll call?
Okay. Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman, Adams.
Here. Can you please read the title for communications item number 1482?
Request of Shedrick J. Wilkins to address council regarding more Transition Projects, Inc. shelters and funds for shelter and services for human prostitution trafficking.
Wilkins, Mr. Wilkins. All right. Can you please read the title for communications item number 1483?
Request of Pat Wagner to address council regarding the river.
Good morning, Pat. Please come forward. Have a seat. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Glad to be here. I lost my notes. I'm sorry, between the car and here, so.
Okay, it's a blustery day.
I'll wing it. Yeah. Okay. I'm Pat Wagner. I'm from Linton, the Linton area, and I'm here. In 1982, I had applied to go with Northwest Medical Teams to Thailand. And then I got a call almost within days of when they said we were going to go. And they said from Boys and Girls Aid Society that they had a baby for me. So I decided to wait to go and do that sort of thing. In the meanwhile, I've raised 7 children as teenagers and through their teenage years. And I've had one go to prison. One was molested by an internet person he met. Another one, the father of my grandchild is the biggest drug dealer in St. John's. I've seen their friends drop out of school, die from suicide, murder, and die on the highway in front of the Linton Community Center. As I was standing on the side of the highway holding up a mom, I realized, and some other moms with me realized, that, you know, we can fix it here. We can do something about where we are, but we sure can't do much about the world or even the city, really. That became really apparent to us. So we took our land use plan forward, the Linton Land Use Plan, and with a lot of high hopes. And We lost, but we didn't really lose because we gained a lot. We learned a lot. We've grown a lot. We're a lot older than we were then. And we decided, how can we find common ground? What do we have in common with the Working Waterfront Coalition? Well, there's a lot. One is love for the children and care about the children in this community. We do have that in common, and that was demonstrated last summer at the golf tournament that the Linton Community Center had. And we had 28 corporate sponsors, and many of them were members of the Working Waterfront Coalition, and about 140 players. So then we started talks. Is my time up?
No, you have another.
We started talks. Frank Berg from Owens Corning came up with this idea of building cedar lath canoes. Knife River prepared the ground. Northwest Container Services donated a 40-foot container. Mike from the Vintage Boat Works is going to help the kids do it. We're going to start this project of building these canoes, and we're going to take the kids, teach them how to do it in Linton, because one of the 40 indicators of success for kids is having people involved in projects. Anyway, sorry.
Glad you're here. We look forward to seeing you again.
All right. And I'm here to ask for river access for the children of Linton and the people that mainly just a trail of whatever, easement, anything.
Thank you, Pat.
Please find money in the budget for that. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for your continued advocacy for Linton and North Portland, Northwest Portland. Carla, can you please read communications item number 1484?
Request of David Anderson to address council regarding the dangerous traffic condition on Northeast Wisteria Drive.
Hi. Welcome, Mr. Anderson. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for allowing me to address the council. I'm Dave Anderson. I'm a board member of the Beaumont-Wilshire Neighborhood Association, and I've lived on Northeast Wisteria Drive with my wife for about 15 years. This is to follow up on a letter that the Neighborhood Association Board sent to the council last month regarding Wisteria Drive. I want to thank Commissioners Fritz and Saltzman for their responses. By way of quick background, this is a portion of Wisteria Drive connects Northeast 41st to 42nd as it goes from Fremont down to the Hollywood neighborhood. It's one of the major north-south connectors in that neighborhood. And there's been a long history of accidents on our street. The problem is that it was poorly designed initially, and it tends to send cars off the road, frankly, and hit parked cars or trees or worse. One of my neighbors has built a cement wall in front of his house. Another has put large boulders in his parking strip. About a year and a half ago, I had to help a woman who was pinned in a car after a car she was driving in rear-ended a parked car. Last winter, we had, in two separate instances, TriMet buses crash on our street. And the first three or four houses at that curve have essentially become uninhabitable. We've had a series of people move in and out of those houses who just get frustrated with the situation and then leave. The street is heavily used by pedestrians and bicyclists and skateboarders. And the Neighborhood Association, I know that there's the long-term fix is going to be very expensive, and we don't expect that to happen anytime soon, but we think that there are a lot of things that can be done in the meantime. And in particular, we know that the city has designated Alameda Boulevard as a bike boulevard, and that's just upstream from where this problem intersection is. So we're hoping that something can be done in conjunction with that process. And in particular, we like what the city has done out on Willamette Boulevard near Rosa Parks Way. And one of the things that I would be interested in is a permanent speed reader board as folks approach that curve. Also the Neighborhood Association recognizes that the city is, you know, limited in its funding, and we would consider contributing towards any solution to help remedy this problem. We're not asking to jump into the front of the line of any CIP or transportation system plan or anything like that. We just want to get in line and raise this problem to the council's awareness. Thanks very much.
Well, I appreciate your letter from about a month ago. We are, it is in the list to review yet again. So we will get back to you. It'll probably be another month.
Okay.
Because of the requests that have come in before you. Uh-huh. But we'll get back to you with I think it'll be our fourth look over the years when I saw the file. So we'll get back to you and see if we can come up with some cost-effective ways to make a dent in the problem.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. All right, can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 1485?
Request of Allison Gavine to address Council regarding the urgency of cell tower regulation in Portland.
Ms. Gavine? Oh, hi. Welcome to City Council. Glad you're here.
Good morning, council members. Thank you for allowing me to speak this morning on the issue of cell phone towers near schools. My name is Alison Gavine. I'm the principal and CEO of a successful women-owned consultancy. I'm also a former community development practitioner from a leading community development authority in the United Kingdom. I spent 15 years informing government policy planning in both Glasgow and London. I'm also the parent of a seventh grade student at Mount Tabor Middle School, and founder of a community group called Mount Tabor Facts, which is Families Against Cell Phone Towers Near Schools. Our parent group was formed to stop Clearwire Corporation from attempting to place a wireless antenna on a PGE pole in a public right-of-way adjacent to our wonderful middle school, which currently houses 550 children, staff, as well as a program for deaf and hard of hearing students and a life skills program for students with profound learning disabilities. The American Academy of Pediatrics is calling for a precautionary principle after highlighting an association between cell phone towers and childhood leukemia, and both Germany and Israel have reported a fourfold and tenfold increase in breast cancer rates, respectively, in areas with cellular antennas. Clearwire and other telephone companies have embarked on a relentless campaign to take advantage of a loophole in city regulations which govern the public right-of-way. The FCC 1996 Telecom Act states that municipalities cannot prevent telecoms from conducting business, but most importantly, it does not state in what way. Both the Environmental Protection Agency and the Food and Drug Administration cite children and elderly populations as vulnerable. Such vulnerability is well established. The FDA and EPA have also said that the FCC Act does not provide adequate protection for those vulnerable populations. This then falls to the city to provide that coverage under your authority. On the basis of this, we ask for the following changes in regulation to protect our vulnerable populations. One, we ask for an immediate moratorium on all right-of-way priority four applications for cell tower applications. Neither the FCC Act nor local jurisdiction prevents you from doing this. Two, we ask for an immediate public hearing to gather proposals from all stakeholders for a new ordinance. The FCC Act does not prevent the city from doing this. Number three, we ask for a 1,500-foot setback on wireless antenna from all schools and sensitive community places. The FCC Act does not prevent the city from doing this. Four, we ask the city for due diligence on this issue by hiring the services of an independent radio frequency engineer to inform city policy. The city's job, as per the 1996 Telecoms Act, is not to prove that the installation's effects are dangerous. It is to prove that they are safe. Number five, we ask that the city increase the cost of a pole permit, currently set at $2,000 with no time limits. We ask that all new permits have time limits. As any Fortune 500 corporate marketer will tell you, competitive pricing and services are what drives the marketplace, not taxes. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Can you please read the title for communications item number 1486?
Request of Kimberly Kohler to address council regarding the urgency of cell tower regulation in Portland.
Welcome, Ms. Kohler.
My name is Kimberly Kohler. I'm a lifetime resident of Portland, Oregon. I'm neither a scientist nor an attorney. I've just lived in Portland all my life with a certain set of expectations about my city government. I believe that there exists a covenant between civilized people that certain activities appropriate in one area are not necessarily appropriate in another. Clearwire, a company not even registered as a utility in Oregon, a company that has just told the SEC they are going broke, apparently has the right to strap panel and microwave antennas onto utility poles in residential zones without the permission of people living nearby. I guarantee most Portlanders do not know that yet. When Clearwire announced plans in early September to target a pole at 3924 Southeast Ogden, they didn't seem to care that the installation was only 20 feet from a classic old Portland home and near a Montessori preschool. At a second public meeting Clearwire was forced to hold, the residents of Woodstock and Eastmoreland were asked to pick a better site. We refused. Clearwire chose for us. This time, the winning site is not quite as close to private homes, but still close to the Montessori preschool and Holy Family grade school. Clearwire is torturing the residents of Woodstock and Eastmoreland by moving the pole back and forth across 39th. The company will submit an application December 2nd. It is with the greatest degree of urgency that we request our city officials to declare a 6-month moratorium on all priority 4 utility pole installations until this madness can be brought under control. We are also asking you to charge a lot more than the one-time $2,000 fee for priority 4 sightings and dedicate that money to funding an independent RF engineer to verify tower signal strength claims and to interpret the contour maps Clearwire uses to point out coverage gaps. Woodstock and Eastmoreland residents have been given bogus maps that were quite different from Clearwire's website. Does an 8-block area without indoor 4G coverage qualify as a coverage gap? Woodstock and Eastmoreland residents say, we don't think so. In addition, our research into legal websites suggests city officials do have the right to ask Clearwire to disclose all of their project sites and interconnections so we don't have to keep fighting these people one pole at a time. Clearwire says putting wireless antennas in the public right-of-way is in response to public demand. Based on what I've been hearing at neighborhood meetings on both sides of the river, the public is demanding the city do something about Clearwire. Give us our moratorium. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just for my colleagues, I thank you all for coming down. I recognize many of you from the folks who were there at the meeting on at Southeast Uplis on Monday. We have asked the city attorney to look into whether we can do a moratorium, and the answer is no. So that doesn't mean that we can't do anything, and we will continue to work with you and with our colleagues in the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management to see what else we can do.
Thank you. All right. Consideration of the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? All right. Carla, would you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have a 9:30 time certain. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 1487?
Authorize an agreement for services with the Regional Arts and Culture Council to promote and administer selected arts and culture matters for the city and provide for payment.
Okay. I'm pleased to reintroduce to the council and to the cable viewing audience the Director of Arts and Culture in the Mayor's Office, Jennifer Yocum.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Jennifer Yocum, Arts and Culture Policy Director for Mayor Adams. Thank you for the opportunity, Mayor and Commissioners, to present on the RAC contract today. This is the renegotiation of the Regional Arts and Culture Council contract. It is a 5-year contract. Accompanying the contract is accompanying the agreement for services is a document outlining performance measures for those services. And I wanted to just highlight a little bit about the process that we went through to get here today. We did a thorough review of that contract and the performance measures. We took to task the council-identified priority of equity not only in our long-term planning for the city through the Portland plan, but in everything that we're doing every day. And when we talked to RAC about that council priority, they, you know, very much responded positively and wanted to make sure that we infuse this next contract with that priority. So you'll hear more about the specifics on that in a little bit. But I just, before we get started, I want to take the opportunity to thank Eloise Damrosch, Executive Director of the Regional Arts and Culture Council, board members, board chair, Carol Smith, and consultant, George Thorne, and board member Lena Garcia-Siebold for being here today. So thank you.
Thank you. Eloise?
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and I want to thank the mayor and Jennifer for putting in a lot of energy and time with us to get this contract fine-tuned in a way that we all feel really good about. Before I say anything else, I want to just say that many of us have just come from a wonderful morning of celebrating business contributions to the arts in this region and in the state. Over 450 people gathered early in the morning to do that, and It's very gratifying to be able to work in a community where arts and business are so much in tune with each other, which leads me into saying how appreciative we are of the support of City Council over the years for arts and culture, especially this particular City Council. It's really because of your, I mean, you're clearly our largest funder, and it's because of your ongoing support that we can do more and more in this region, in this community, and reach an ever-increasing population that we care deeply about. So with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to my able chair, Carol Smith, who will talk more about the board goals for this year.
Thank you, Eloise. I'm Carol Smith, chair of the Regional Arts and Culture Council Board. Thank you for letting us come to talk to you today a little bit. As a retired school principal, I'm all about measurement and moving things forward. And so one of the things that's been an important focus for our board is to really set and establish distinct goals as we move forward and to really try to find ways to measure our success and progress, as well as the areas where we need to continue to work more diligently to meet those goals. We've established basically six major goals for this current year, some of which are ongoing goals, some are new. One of our primary goals, of course, is to continue to grow our Work for Art program. Again, referring to the breakfast we had this morning, you can see there's tremendous support in our business community for our Work for Art program. I think we had like a 20% increase in donations this year, a 10% increase in numbers of individuals. But more importantly, this vehicle gives not just big companies, but it gives the individual in the small Burgervilles was the example given this morning, people working at a minimum wage who still feel compelled to value the importance of arts in the lives of their families and children, and they are making donations through this vehicle as well. Another one of our goals, of course, is to continue to grow our Right Brain Initiative, which is a totally exciting arts integration project. We're now in touch with over 11,000 students in four school districts. Portland being our largest participant, we look forward to growing this even more. I think that with the challenging economic times and the pressures on schools, the fact that there's still unbounded enthusiasm for this program as we meet with superintendents across the broader region as well, shows again the hunger and value this community places on the arts, and the Regional Arts and Culture Council feels this obligation to really try to help support and fulfill this urgent need for our children to have arts in their life. It's important, as being an arts council, to really build on existing partnerships throughout our community, and this means with foundations, this means with businesses. This is obviously something that we're really trying very hard to do. Also, to try to work with the Creative Advocacy Network and our Act for Art efforts. Many of our board members, for example, have taken very active leadership roles on committees and subcommittees in both of those areas to really put their volunteer sweat and energies behind these efforts, which they feel are so important. This work is above and beyond, actually, I might even add, their work as board members for the Regional Arts and Culture Council. Access to the arts, I think, is really one of the things that speaks to me, again, referring to my own personal experience in schools. I want every child to have opportunities. And as I look across our great city, You know, you see a lot of diversity. Just if you just even think about the restaurant culture in this fabulous place, each of the cultures represented through the taste and smells of our city really represents a culture of the people that those represent. And one of the things that we are very anxious to do and continue to grow is to actively reach out to communities of color and to be sure that all children, all communities, that we hear their voice and that we're responsive to their not only serving to them, but being sure that they are a part of our committees, part of our internal structure. And so we really are living and breathing and have empathy and concern for all folks. I want to just also say that we're really moving in a new direction this year. We've added a new sustainability goal, trying to be green or emerald green, whatever our committee is called. We have a subcommittee focusing on that. It's a new endeavor for us, not that we haven't been very conscious of trying to be responsible in this area, but I think we've now formed committees that will make this a dramatic focus for us. And interestingly enough, these committees are involving not only board members, but also staff and board members working collaboratively together. I think that's an important thing. But living and really stressing the mission of the Regional Arts and Culture Council will be our ongoing leadership goal. And that mission is, through vision, leadership, and service, the Regional Arts and Culture Council works to integrate arts and culture in all aspects of community life. So again, we really appreciate your support for us in the past, look forward to continued in the future, and we really do thank you from the bottoms of our hearts. I'd like to introduce another board member, Lena Garcia-Siebold.
Lena Garcia-Siebold, good morning, and I'm very happy to be here talking about cultivating ways to cultivate diversity within RAC. And even happier to be working on it instead of just talking about it and cultivating. We're actually involved in a lot of very exciting discussions at board meetings and in subcommittee levels. And it's just refreshing, and it's just exciting at the same time to figure out ways of weaving art into each one of the communities that make up our city of Portland. We're looking at grassroots levels. We're looking at each community and ways of promoting diversity within the arts initiatives within those communities, both with our outreach and our grants panels and review committees and decisions about which artists are going to get funded or which projects are going to get funded. So we're taking some very direct approaches and actions. We're working closely with each or diverse organizations, community organizations within the various communities of color within Portland. We're up to 25% board members right now, soon to be 30% of people of color on our board. So we're very proud of that accomplishment during the last 6 to 9 months, actually, or a year. We're researching practices for diversifying how we provide our own services. We're improving tools for tracking that progress. And that's not always easy, but we're collectively trying to put our heads together to figure out how to do that, to make sure that we're reaching everybody in our various communities. We're also asking staff and board members and everybody affiliated with us, with RAC, to participate in diversity trainings and workshops within the year. This is goal number 6 in our packet, and it's to cultivate diversity in all of RAC's programs and activities. And like I said, it's real exciting to be part of this. And really, this new goal is really the spiritual art of our time. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is George Thorne. I'm the co-director of Arts Action Research. I consult with not-for-profit arts and culture organizations. I moved to Portland in July of 1996, and I've worked with or are currently working with about 100 different arts and culture organizations of all sizes and disciplines. When I describe the conditions of arts and culture organizations today in the following way. I've never seen people work harder to try to figure out how to lose less. How many more staff cuts we have to make, program cuts, services cuts, to keep the organization in balance. It must be kept in balance. But it's been a very difficult process. What we find is there are no longer any good choices. People are having to make the least bad choice, hopefully strategically making the least bad choice. The great majority of our arts and culture organizations have no working capital reserves in order to tide through this period of time. So they're working on a very, very fine margin. I do not see an end in sight for the arts and culture field. I think although we talk about employment being a lagging indicator for health of the health of the economy, I think arts and culture will be a lagging indicator. It will come behind when we get any better health to the economy. In my experience of working with arts organizations, I talk about three categories. There's survival, there's stability, and there's long-term sustainability. Some of our organizations, survival is an ongoing question. Most of our organizations are focusing on remaining stable, to remain stable. And often they're having to redefine what stability means. So how do we remain stable? And a very, very few of our organizations can focus on long-term sustainability. So most of the work is really focused on organizations and stability. RAC is a critical foundation and necessary foundation for the stability of our arts and culture organizations. And the operating support grant is a good example of that. Since most funding is project-based, and what organizations need are operating support. The operating support grant process for RAC is critical. So for the 47 organizations who are able to benefit from that program, the money is important, but equal important to the money is they can now plan for 2 years at a time, where without that operating support, it's just year by year by year. I think also the work for art money then is an additional level of stability which comes to our arts and culture sector. RAC offers serves a very diverse range of constituents, and these constituents are served and benefit from all of RAC's programs. Over the last several years, I've seen a relationship of trust and respect has deepened between RAC and all of its various constituencies. I think that level of respect, that growing level of respect, is due to the leadership, the programs, the outreach, and the funding of RAC. So I ask you, please, to continue the support for RAC for this 5-year contract. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. I really appreciate it.
Mayor, can I ask just a couple of questions?
Of course.
We have this august panel. Don't want to lose the opportunity. Couple questions. First, you alluded, Eloise, to the breakfast this morning. What does the city of Portland have to do to become number one in the Work for Art program?
Contribute the most amount of money. That's what it's all about.
So what the mayor and I learned today is that we actually lag Burgerville, which has 216 employees participating, who the vice president said were largely entry-level workers. So do you have some suggestions for us just in terms of?
Well, I would suggest that you talk with Catherine Jackson, who manages that program, because actually the person at Burgerville who normally we speak with wasn't there today, but he asked her exactly the same question after their first year, that when they were blown away by how much money they raised the first year, and he asked her, what can we do to significantly increase our giving? And she ticked off 4 or 5 things, all of which he did, and they had a huge percentage growth each year. So there are all kinds of things, from bringing artists into the workplace to get people excited, to challenges and leadership by example.
We could do friendly challenges. I know we can't coerce people into
it. No. Friendly challenges, like we heard this morning from the business leaders.
Yeah. Second question is in connection with what you testified to about Objective 6 and diversity. What is the role of we, the commissioners, to help you reach that goal in terms of the composition of selection panels?
I would say feed us names. When we're doing the, for example, the project grant panels, we have panels based on every different discipline that we give grants in. So if there are people that you know that we might not come across, we would very much appreciate any kind of suggestions of potential panelists. That's one thing that immediately comes to mind. And then directing people, when you're out and around the city meeting with your constituents, if you hear anything that would make in your mind connect whatever you're hearing with arts and culture, if you can help us connect with them, that's always very much appreciated.
And I guess finally, I know there was some disappointment during the campaign that we weren't able to structure a debate or a conversation with certain candidates about the direction of Oregon in terms of arts and culture. Do you know whether there's a transition committee that's focused on arts and culture with the governor-elect or some effort to sort of chart a vision for the next 4 years?
I don't know if there's a formally structured group, but I know that the folks working in Salem in the arts are making efforts to get some inroads in to have conversations with them. And I haven't had an update recently, but I know it's very high on everybody's mind.
Thank you.
Good questions. Thank you.
I really appreciate the increased emphasis on diversity and culturally diverse art forms. I'm wondering what you're planning to do to win back some of the folks who've been rejected in the past and who maybe aren't aware of this new focus.
Well, we're increasing our outreach by talking with a lot of different cultural groups and trying to reconnect at various levels in our organization. And we have tasked not only a task force of the board, but also of the staff to increase this outreach. It's going to be a gradual process, we know, over time. But as Lena mentioned, we're almost at 30% of our board, which is just in itself not only an important gesture, but it also connects us with more of the communities they represent. And Lena's a great example because she is so completely connected with the Hispanic community and is raising our awareness every day. So we're taking this very seriously and recognize that, you know, the population in this region is going to be very different even when we come back in 5 years to renew our contract again. So we'll be continually working at this, and we'll be reporting to you in our State of the Arts in the spring.
Thank you. And if I might make a suggestion, perhaps some of your new board members might meet with applicants who in the past have been rejected to talk with them about the application process and to let them know that there is now a 30% goal in your funding. Because as you so rightly noted, a lot of it is about the funding, and a lot of it is about the funding of the ongoing organization rather than a particular project. So I think that's particularly important for you to get that message out there that you are going to be looking to increase that funding.
And might I add one thing here, too? Excuse me, Eloise.
No.
That is, I think, one of the things that we have outlined for our plans, and that is to help take that application process out into these communities so we are really able to educate people about how they can even begin making a successful application. Oftentimes, that's been part of the link of the issue, is that, you know, we have not done as thorough a job of really extending out into the community and helping people understand that we are a vehicle that they have a right to access. And so that is on our agenda for this coming year, to really do some very aggressive education out in our variety of communities so that people will be more informed and we can help them write these successful grants. Because we do also want to have a high standard of what we're acknowledging.
I think it would be helpful to have, as well as that, an acknowledgement that in the past the grants that have been given out have not perhaps understood what the applicants were
Good
trying
point.
To do.
Absolutely.
So that it needs to be a two-way street, and I appreciate very much all of your focus on doing that.
I wanted to just mention also that we've had several meetings with the leadership of the Coalition of Communities of Color and have an ongoing sort of dialogue about progress that we're making and getting suggestions from them.
Thank you.
And also I want to just make clear that RAC, with this contract, and they've been enthusiastic in accepting the responsibility as, how would I put it, through powers of persuasion, charm, or cajoling to also seek this kind of equity in the groups that we fund, in the groups that RAC fund. So it doesn't just start and stop at RAC. This is a community-wide effort to be responsive to the very depressing communities of color report that showed a widening gap of inequity, especially based on race. So I really appreciate you taking up that specific charge in addition to your own specific work facilitating greater access and greater diversity in the groups that we fund. So thank you. All right, unless there's additional discussion, do we have anyone that wishes to testify on this matter?
No one else signed up.
Anyone wishes to testify on this matter? All right, can you please call the vote on this emergency ordinance?
Leonard?
I'm pleased to vote to continue our relationship. You guys do a great job, and I greatly appreciate the work. Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you for both the staff and the volunteer time. This is indeed a worthy endeavor. I'm very excited about this new emphasis on diversity, and be happy to help in any way I can. Aye.
Fish?
Yeah, tomorrow we're hosting the Oregon Cultural Trust here in City Hall, and I think one of the continuing opportunities and challenges is how we align what we're doing here regionally with the state. And I think there are some question marks about where we're going over the next 4 years and where the leadership's going to come from at the statewide level. But there's no question about where the leadership's coming from regionally. So thank you for your excellent report. Aye.
Adams.
I want to, again, just underscore my thanks to each of you. I think the importance of partnering with the foundations that are the largest private sector contributors to major arts organizations and working with them to absolutely scrub their budgets in ways that they've never been scrubbed and to ensure that they are spending their money as wisely as possible and getting their revenues as wisely as possible in these difficult times. I think that partnership is really important to fortifying trust that arts and culture have to be effective like any other sort of societal endeavor. So thank you for that partnership. Again, thanks for taking on the difficult work of equity. Portlanders might not know, but I do. To brag a little bit, the Right Brain Initiative is a national model that was started with this organization. The Work for Art continues to be a national model in terms of the amount of private sector leverage. And I like Commissioner Fish's question, what can we do in city government to be number one? and we will work on that. So thank you. Aye.
Thank you.
Contract is approved.
Thank you.
Can you please read resolution item number 1488?
Authorize a fifth amendment to the development agreement and amendment number 2 to the entertainment complex ground lease with Rip City Management LLC, doing business as Portland Arena Management, successor in interest to Oregon Arena Corporation in regards to the Rose Quarter development.
So I appreciate the council's indulgence to provide an introduction and an update for the record on this project. I'm pleased today to present to the City Council and to the community an opportunity to pursue the potential of adding jobs and reaching the full potential as part of reaching the full potential of the Rose Quarter District. And in doing so, creating a vibrant, active, income, multi-use part of the city. For the past 17 years, the district, with arguably the best views of the city, has been too dormant, aside from the amateur and professional athletic events. With the extension of the Blazers development rights, 6 months from now, City Council will be deliberating on a vision, a concept that ties together existing uses with a multitude of improvements knit together by a district plan. That plan will make the Veterans Memorial Coliseum a viable venue for the community, will outline early stage development that brings cranes and construction jobs to the area, and will have a strategy for long-term jobs and investment centered on Portland's thriving athletic outdoor industry. Moreover, this plan will include services and programs that are accessible to all Portlanders and those that visit our great city. All of this will be driven with social equity in mind. A little bit of background. In August 2009, I convened a 32-member stakeholder advisory committee, we call the SAC, comprised of members representing a broad range of community interests, including local neighborhood associations, veterans, sustainability advocates, architectural preservationists, urban planners, designers, artists, entertainers, and folks from the East Side businesses and advocates for equity as well. And I want to thank them for their 15 months of work. Attendance at their 16 meetings has always been 80 to 100%, and there's been a lot of homework, and the homework turned in has always been above 90%, and we appreciate that. These volunteers solicited ideas and concepts from the public for the renovation or adaptive reuse of Veterans Memorial Coliseum, which we will be coming back to City Council in January on its anniversary to officially rename it Veterans Memorial Coliseum, and heard presentations from individuals and teams who submitted concepts for future use. They reaffirmed the direction to proceed with the Veterans Memorial Coliseum process. In April of 2010, Council accepted the recommendations of the advisory committee and directed PEC to solicit proposals for the renovation or adaptive reuse of Veterans Memorial Coliseum. And I want to underscore, this is the first time in the history of this part of town that the City Council actually made a decision on whether Memorial Coliseum should stay or whether Veterans Memorial Coliseum should go. And if it wasn't, when I look back on the 17 years of lack of progress in this part of town, the fact that it is only 18.8 acres of developable land, significantly smaller than the River District and the Pearl District, the fact that it was an open question whether Veterans Memorial Coliseum would stay or go froze progress to a large degree on this district. So I want to thank the council for making that decision, and we've been able to move forward. After doing the due diligence on the three finalists, it was clear to me, and eventually also opined by the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, that while many of the suggestions and aspects of the proposals that had been submitted can be achieved in the broader district, that they were not cost-effective to try to cram all into Veterans Memorial Coliseum. So we determined to move forward, having decided that Memorial Coliseum would stay, to move forward with the district planning process. Our goal is to create a living laboratory, as I mentioned, of mixed-use, mixed-income, to create jobs and design, athletics and outdoor gear industry cluster. And last night we had a fantastic gathering of the entire industry. It was great to see Columbia Sportswear CEO sitting next to the Nike Vice President for North American Operations and a whole host of what are normally competitors in a fierce industry talking about the emerging strategy facilitated by this City Council and the Portland Development Commission for moving the entire industry forward as a global powerhouse. To facilitate product research and development to market, the district has an opportunity to co-locate academic programs for the creation and design, for around creation and design of athletic and outdoor gear, to co-locate educational programs, skill trade, and college programs. And we did a quick survey of all the related programs to athletic and outdoor pursuits, and between the state colleges and universities and the private colleges and universities and then K through 12, we have some of the best educational and academic and research and development in the world. So having a focus of that, a co-location of that, or an outpost in this district would provide a great front door to the industry. And given that the major uses will continue to be sports and athletics, and outdoor pursuits, it's a great potential fit. Today we'll hear from Patrick Quinton, who will talk about PDC's phenomenal work to reflect, as I mentioned, the importance of the athletic outdoor industry. We'll hear from Mike McCullough, who will go through the initial thinking sort of on the ground of sort of what the physical aspects of the district might be. And then we will hear from representatives of veterans and from folks that deservedly are looking for equity and substantial community benefits. So with that, I will turn it over to, who's up first? Skip? Oh, Chair Andrews. I want to say on something like this, it has been a great help to have someone from the development and facility management industry at the helm of PDC. You've added, you had great value on everything that you work on, but it has been especially useful here, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Commissioners, I'm Scott Andrews. I'm Chair of the Portland Development Commission. My comments will be brief as I sew together three key areas we expect to make progress on between now and May 24th of next year. First, a district plan and a tangible phase one development, which includes a financing plan for a private project and renovation of the Veterans Memorial Coliseum that supports the city's economic development strategy and meets or exceeds our sustainability goals. Second, to convene partners in the athletic outdoor industry cluster to see if we can accelerate the growth of the industry in the context of the Rose Quarter. And third, to promote social equity opportunities as the entire area develops through a community benefits agreement and good neighbor agreement. 6 months will provide the collective team with the opportunity to thoughtfully direct future private and public investment at the Rose Quarter within the defined context of the district plan and provide them to City Council in May. This includes working with Portland Arena Management in crafting a Phase 1 development proposal for the area consistent with the community vision, the broader district plan, and the city's economic development strategy. It also assumes pursuing improvements to the Coliseum with partners such as the Portland Winterhawks and the veterans community. As the economy begins to recover, time's on our side, yet the six-month extension offers some motivation to be swift as well. Although we see economic trends positive, it's not going to be significantly different in the 6 months from now. As the mayor mentioned, the district has potential to go beyond simply a destination for amateur and professional athletics. Let's not forget, this area has seen many concepts, ranging from amusement parks in the mid-90s to a concept of dense mixed use later in that decade. Most recently, a Jumptown vision with shops, nightlife, music, and activity was put forward. However, most recently, under the leadership of the mayor and Trailblazer President Larry Miller, a refreshed vision is being discussed, one which has a strong tie to the city's adopted economic development strategy and specifically our emerging role as a leader in the athletic outdoor industry. This recognizes the district's natural ability to brand sports and entertainment, and Portland's strength as a hub for businesses that design and sell outdoor lifestyle merchandise. Our aspirations reflect hope that the nucleus becomes an employment hub and a showcase, a place to test innovative outdoor products and a community of like-minded creative people. Perhaps it's even an opportunity for companies within the athletic and outdoor cluster to work hand-in-hand with educational institutions to grow industry talent. And Patrick Quinton later will expand on what I consider amazing staff work that will influence and strategically direct that growth. Clearly, this area also has the potential to benefit Portland and our community in many ways. We all need to be steadfast and inclusive in our pursuit of social equity as we transform large areas of the city through public investment. The area of Northeast Portland, in particular, presents us all with a chance to be innovative and redefine success. We can go well beyond the construction trades if district plans blossom over the next decade. My colleague, Charles Wilhoit, will speak next about the community benefits component of this effort and the objectives that we hope to achieve. So these are obviously big dreams, and as always, we have a healthy appetite, one larger than the availability of public resources. 2013 is the last opportunity to sell bonds for the Oregon Convention Center Urban Renewal Area. At this point, PDC can invest around $20 million in the Rose Quarter. This gets us close to the district maximum allowable debt without taking money from other planned investments. Finally, I believe the six-month extension will allow the community and City Council to have a better sense of our collective plan for the district and how much private investment can be levered and the kinds of public benefits created, first and foremost being job creation, district revitalization, and social equity. I enthusiastically endorse this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A good question is why this part of town? You answered that in your comments. There is funding that will expire, that has been on the books for decades, that will expire in the coming months. So that's why now and why this part of town. But there are opportunities, unlike a lot of other districts in Portland, to actually have a citywide benefit because of the connections of transit and other transportation connections. This is a district that really is at the center of a lot of things, and especially for underemployed and unemployed Portlanders that live in East Portland or anywhere connected by especially light rail, this district can serve a citywide constituency when it comes to job creation. And then the other point I just wanted to highlight as well is this would be the first time if we pursue outdoor athletics and outdoor, one of our targeted industries, and we actually design a district with that in mind. Obviously not exclusively that, but if we design that with that emphasis in mind, this will be the first time that the City of Portland and the Portland Development Commission have actually designed a district, a renewal district, making a connection back to our economic development strategy. I think that's smart, and again, I want to thank you for your leadership. For those that don't know the history, this part of town used to be a thriving community centered that was a center, a hub for the African American community called Jumptown, and a lot of cultural heart and soul was on North Williams. That was all scraped away by urban renewal many years ago. So community benefits, doing what we can to make amends for that is important to all of us. And so Commissioner Wilhoit took on the task to come up with a community benefits agreement that's a concept for moving forward. And he was perfectly situated to do this, given that he just came off a year and a half of chairing the North-Northeast Economic Development Initiative. So thank you for your work on this, Commissioner.
Well, thank you, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. Thanks for allowing me to have time on your agenda today as you contemplate this very significant decision regarding the potential extension of the development rights in the area. And as you mentioned, Mayor Adams, I did chair the North-Northeast Economic Development Initiative for Portland Development Commission. And the Community Advisory Committee, with regard to that endeavor, unanimously recommended that we consider a community benefits agreement inside development agreements with regard to the Rose Quarter. Acting on this recommendation, Mayor Adams, you asked me to chair the Rose Quarter Stakeholder Advisory Committee beginning this past August. And once again, our goal was to examine community benefits for the Rose Quarter Memorial Coliseum redevelopment projects. The subcommittee was comprised of 20 individuals representing the Rose Quarter Stakeholder Advisory Committee, the Minority Chambers of Commerce, community nonprofits, education, urban renewal advisory committees, organized labor, local residents, and businesses. So we had very good representation on that committee. I would also like to acknowledge Commissioner John Molis, who sat on that committee with us. Commissioner Molis brings a very level-headed approach to all of his deliberations. And he also had very valuable labor-related expertise that was critical to our decision-making in that process. Over the past few months, the subcommittee focused on how development projects in the Rose Quarter could benefit the entire Portland community, not just a select few. And we embarked on that process by examining economic as well as non-economic returns on public investment, workforce training and hiring returns, construction and contracting returns, and local business returns. So we broke our analysis into those broad categories and tried to develop recommendations that would satisfy community benefits with regard to those areas. On November 3rd, the subcommittee approved 26 recommendations that we believe provide a very strong toolbox for negotiating the terms of a community benefits agreement with any potential developer in the Rose Quarter. These recommendations are fairly general and comprehensive, but we believe the toolbox, once again, is very adequate to provide all the insights and the perspectives needed to develop community benefits agreements based on the specific projects that might come under our review. The subcommittee members proved to represent a dedicated group of community advocates, and this is very typical for Portland process. And this group went so far as to strongly recommend, almost demand, that we go above and beyond business as usual in Portland. The Rose Quarter, as you mentioned, Mayor Adams, has a very unique history, and the continued development of the area presents, once again, a unique opportunity for Portland. We can reinvest, and that reinvestment, once again, should touch the largest number of people possible, keeping in mind the history of the area. As you all know, and as anyone who's paying attention recognizes,